Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moore's Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and tonight we'll be dealing with what are the basic principles of black consciousness. We'll be answering the following questions and much, much more. What is the difference between Moors right here in America and Blackamoors from Africa in Europe? What are the basic principles of black consciousness? What is the law and where did it come from? Was there a real place called Lemuria? How do you deal with the county recorder's office? How do you know when toxic people are around you? What should you do with toxic people? How high is your vibration resonating? What is meant by knowledge of self? These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here this evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I have a book list too, so what I would recommend that you do is get your paper and pencil handy so you can write down the title of these books and their authors. Okay, I think we've got about 18 and 19 books that I want you to look at and do an investigation for yourself. Don't take anybody's word for it. Do it for yourself. And I'm gonna go over here and run these little commercials, and which will give you plenty of time to get your paper and pencil. And when we come back, then we're ready to delve down into this thing. Our special guest should be Brother Yoel tonight out of Chicago that runs the Underground Bookstore. He should be coming on in with us here this evening. But in the meantime, let me go over here to these commercials, and that'll give you plenty of time to get your paper and pencil, and then we're ready to go. So y'all hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
The greatest move you can make beginning in 2022 is to move out of the public and into the private. That's how you get rid of student loans, child support, mortgages, foreclosures, and all this kind of business. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out my contact us form by leaving your email address, and I'll rush my free report straight to your email box. Our economy is in shambles today for people who insist on living in the public. Move into the private. Make an easy transaction. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the contact us form, and I'll rush you my free report. As a secured party and creditor, can you buy a home, a car, and other items you need and want? The answer is yes, and there are documents you use to do just that. Catch my radio podcast at Blog Talk Radio. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box with your email address that say join our mailing list, and I will send you my free report. You got credit problems? Contact me at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Let's stay in honor and get into the private.
Mm-hmm.
right, everybody, we back. That's the plenty of time for you to have paper and pencil. What we're going to do, we're going to start smack dab in the middle of this thing and get this hell out of the way. We're going to deal with your vibration, your toxic people and stuff. Now, in order for you to deal with people who are toxic, you want to have knowledge of self. That is the most powerful tool that you can possibly have, which can cause you to resonate at a higher vibrational frequency. Okay? Now, how do you know that you are resonating at a high vibrational frequency? These are just a few of the signs that you can look at. And keep in mind, this has actually happened to me. Number one, animals feel safe in your presence. Now, I went to date a woman for the very first time, and she invited me to her home. And when I walked in there, she said, well, okay, come on around here. I'm in the den. And I said, okay. So we go around in the den, and I sit on the sofa. And she had a cat. And that cat jumped up on the sofa and just comfortably laid her head on my leg. And the girl said, you know what? I have never seen her do that. Out of all the people that have ever been here, including the men that I've tried to date, I've never seen her do that. Number two, people stare at you in public. Number three, random strangers love to come to you and talk and tell you their life stories. Now, this happens to me quite often. Number four, you can feel the energy of a room shift when you walk in. Number five, now this is the part that you really, really have to pay attention to. And this is how you know that you are resonating at a higher vibrational frequency. Because when you are at a high vibrational frequency, you irritate toxic people just by being your true and normal self. You hear what I say? You irritate people who are toxic just by being your true and normal self. You don't have to do anything. If you got something to say, there's a challenge. Because you are resonating at a higher vibrational frequency, and people who are toxic are irritated by that. And it all starts with knowledge of self. Now, let's take a look at knowledge of self. What is that? When you say you have knowledge of self, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Well, let me give you a for instance. If you have self-knowledge and knowledge of self, that means you have knowledge concerning your own identity. Number two, you know how to take care of yourself. You should know everything about the workings of your brain. You should know everything you need to know about the workings of your body. You should know how to keep the machine functioning properly. Now, sometimes you may drop the ball, but my point here is not to always rely on somebody else to tell you about what's going on in your body. And in your head, that belongs to you. You go to bed with it, you wake up with it, everywhere you go, you carry it with you. It sits right between your shoulders. So when it comes to knowledge of self, and keep in mind, we're talking about getting everything that we possibly have in order to resonate at a higher vibrational frequency. And when you are around people who are resonating at a low vibrational frequency, is going to affect you. And the best thing to do is to get away from that as far as you can. because it is injurious to you. See, it's one thing to be conscious. Now, if you're conscious, that means you're awake, you're walking around. But if you're conscious, you want to be resonating at a particular vibrational frequency. Now, those people who are vibrating at a low vibrational frequency are irritated by you. And I want you to keep that in mind. Now, let's deal with your body and what you put in your body to eat. You got food, air, and water. Now, what I've done for the past 2 weeks, I deal with having attacking food. So for the past 2 weeks, I had a steady diet of nothing but having attacking food and moringa powder. If I ate something, it's probably be a little bowl or something, and I sprinkle a little moringa powder on it. But all day long and all night long, I drink my having attacking food. Now, that purges the body and keeps the machine running in tip-top shape. And you're thinking clearly. You're able to accomplish a lot of different things. Okay? And that's just part of knowledge of self, to learn so much about yourself to, if there's a problem, you're able to fix it based on what you know about it. And you're resonating at an extremely high vibrational frequency. Okay? That, in my personal opinion, is true consciousness. It's not enough for you to put on a shirt and say, I'm conscious, and don't know Jack. Yeah, they'll do that. But anyway, the basic principles of black consciousness. We're going to get down in that this evening, but before we do, the first question is, what is the difference between the Moors right here in America and the blacker Moors in Europe? Now, a lot of people are under the impression that the Moors in Europe and the brothers right here in the United States is one of the same people, but I'm here to tell you now that's two different things. See, over here, we had castles, we had all kind of stuff, pyramids, you name it. And these people don't like you, and they want to take this land from you. They have been financing a whole lot of people to come over here and commit all kind of acts of genocide and murder, kidnapping and robbery. And so I posted some information right there on my group at Amana Educational, Amana Secure Party and Creditor Group. And now you can go over there and look at these videos for yourself. And the information that I'm telling you now is right there for you to see it for yourself. Now, my guests haven't arrived yet, so they give me plenty of time to go ahead and read off this book list, and I want you to write this stuff down. Something going on wrong with the chat room, so I can't type it in there. But the first book is Civilization and the Ancient Egyptians by Katanga A. Bongo. And that is an African sister, and inside this book she tells you some very startling information about the West and what happened over here in the West. The next book is The Shadow of Atlantis by Colonel A. Bradshine. This book was done in 1940. The next book is Ancient Mystics, Oriental Masonry by Dr. R. Swinburne Climber. The next book is Words and Phrases, Origins by Robert Hendrickson. The next book is The Book of the Indians of North America, First People of America by Samuel G. Drake in 1833. The next book is The Native Races of the Pacific States of North America by Herbert Howell Bancroft, 1875. The next book is Indian Roots of American Democracy by Donald A. Grind, Jr. The next book is American Indians Myths and Mysteries by Vincent A. Gaddis. The next book is They All Discovered America by Charles M. Bolan. The next book is The Lost Continent of Mu by James Churchward. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let's get to the second part of this here. The next book is Hidden Cities by Roger G. Kennedy. The next book is Origin of the Big Mound of St. Louis by Professor Spencer Smith. The next book is Blacks in America Before Columbus by Imer von Fleischer. The next book is Blacks Before America by Mark Hyman. The next book is Black People Invented Everything by Dr. Solwan Kumar Das. The next book is Christopher Columbus by Dr. M. K. Serling. The next book is Origin of American Racism by Ronald Sanders. And the next book and the final book is Records of Ancient Races by William McAdams, 1887. Okay, and I'm going to read this book, book list again later on up into the broadcast. But right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over a little shout club for you, and I want you to pay very close attention to what these people have to say about consciousness. Okay? Let me find this thing right here. Yeah, I had to admit that. Hold on. Where you at there, okay? Okay. Boom, 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 bam. Okay, here we go, right here. We're only going to be going for a short time, but pay very close attention to what people have to say about the principles, the basic principles of your consciousness. And we're talking about our people now, okay? All right. So hold on and listen very, very carefully.
What are the basic principles of black consciousness? The basic principles of black consciousness are principles that pertain to a black or Afrikaan person's racial awakening. These principles enforce and encourage an internal desire to improve oneself and the knowledge of one's race, culture, and the pitfalls of the world in which we exist. They also encourage a desire to respect, protect, and uplift the black Afrikaan race so that we as a race can demand respect from other members of the human family and not continue to be seen as people who are weak pushovers who can be easily taken advantage of without consequence. Consciousness is the state of being self-aware. Black consciousness, therefore, is the state of being aware of one's race and its condition relative to other races. Unconscious black people do not recognize that the black and Afrikaan race is despised and under attack. They exist in a fairy tale believing that a god made them to suffer at the hands of other races. Semi-conscious black people do realize that the black race is hated, so they either try their best to assimilate with other races culturally and genetically or rely on human rights laws to protect them. A very small percentage of black people are actually conscious. We take pride in our racial identity and seek ways to preserve our blackness. All black conscious people may not be universally unified in our principles, but I'm sure that we're more similar than different. Dogon spirituality and the Heru interface employs these basic principles of black consciousness. 0. Honor and respect our Afrikaan ancestry and our ancestors. Anthropology states that there are 5 distinct races in the world today, all of which originated from the original Afrikaan race. The fact that Afrikaans still exist is proof that we are the carbon copy and not the blueprint for other races as they would like us to believe. In other words, they did not evolve from us. They genetically mutated from us as a result of our own unaccountable behaviors, then developed environmental adaptations. Today, the cultures and systems that some have created to maintain psychological control over humanity have got most people believing that nirvana is the ultimate goal and fading to white physically and mentally is the only way to achieve real happiness. As conscious-minded people, we need to resist popular culture and return to our own traditions. That involves honoring and respecting our Afrikaan ancestors and our ancestry. One of the most egregious things we've witnessed so far from unconscious black people is the belief that they are anything but Afrikaan. In many parts of the world, including America, there are black dummies claiming to be Hispanic, Arab, Hebrews, and even Native American. They have no expertise to determine their own origin, so they rely on hatred of self, religious ideology, or fake history to comfort their ignorance. Even when genetic DNA tests prove their African origins, they dismiss it, claiming the white man is deceiving them. 1. Value your genetic characteristics. Afrikaners have the most noticeable genetic characteristics of all the races. Our skin tones range from black to golden brown, our hair can be kinky coarse or soft and wavy, and our physical features include thick lips, broad noses, and a strong physique. Although other races admire us for our strength and athletic prowess, they despise us for wanting to compete for the same things in life that they do. Unfortunately, the indoctrinating effect of their culture has had a detrimental effect on our racial pride and self-esteem. The result is our people no longer value our physical genetic characteristics. Most of our women now either wear hair from other races or they burn the kink out of their own hair with chemicals. Both black men and women are either trying to bleach the blackness out of their skin or reproducing with other races to ensure their children will have an easier go at life. We don't blame them. We know they have been indoctrinated into the survival of the fittest mentality of popular culture, so that's all they know. Once they begin to accept and value their African genetic characteristics, they will begin to experience a new sense of racial pride. They will begin to look in the mirror and exclaim, "Black is beautiful." 2. Increase your awareness. Society is being flooded with deceptions and misinformation for many purposes, the most dangerous of which is to keep black people unorganized and dysfunctional. We are resilient people because no other race is receptive to abstract pure energy as we do through our pineal glands. Most of us don't know it, but fortunately they don't either. In fact, those in power control the world by luck, because their pursuit of happiness created conditions in their brains that shifted their psyche outward. That means that in order to achieve happiness, they have to acquire things from the outside world. We call it being right-brained, or desire-dependent. They thrive on conquest, power, and self-righteousness. All indigenous people struggle to survive European domination, simply because we have to adapt their ways in order to survive their conquest. Unfortunately, in the process, most of us become corrupt, unethical, and self-destructive. Our societies are digressing both from internal corruption as well as external psychological, economical, and biological sabotage. Don't think that it's a coincidence that crime, sexual perversion, and drug addiction are so prevalent in our communities. Increasing one's awareness involves gaining knowledge about how society and the world works. But most of all, it means gaining knowledge about how our own brains work. Learn about the eye of Heru in your senses so you can transform from a reactionary person into a truly conscious, self-disciplined, and balanced person who functions using your mind and not your brain. In time, we will become so self-disciplined that we will begin to regain the intuition skills of our ancestors. 3. Choose spirituality over religion. African spirituality existed long before religion. In fact, it was African spirituality that others used to create religions. Now they say their religions are real and civilized, while African spirituality is primitive and occult. Well, we have news for them. Believing in unseen people in the clouds is more occult than believing in the energies that drive the wind, heat the earth, and manipulate matter. Africans call these energies spirits, but they are unseen forces that animate living and non-living things by flowing through them. African spirituality is an extension of our animistic nature. Animism means to live in accord with nature, respect nature, and recognize that no part of nature is more important than the next. In doing so, our ancestors attributed separate spirits to things such as earth, wind, fire, and water. Unfortunately, we began to make idols to represent the spirits. Then we began to worship those idols and depend on them to solve our problems as well as to enrich our lives by satisfying our various unnatural desires. We attributed all good things to our good idols, and we attributed evil to all our bad idols, making them responsible for such things as death, misfortune, bad storms, volcanic eruptions, and even dangerous animals. Eventually, single idols for good and evil replaced our multiple idols. Our idols also became more powerful when we gave them superior moral judgment over every aspect of our lives. That was the genesis of modern religions. Conscious people must recognize that gods and devils are illusions, but if you can't escape religion, then use it for goodwill and not self-servitude. Goodwill is the magnetic force behind religion. Unfortunately, most people, including religious leaders, don't know this. They think that when someone does good, it is because an invisible God is guiding that person. And when someone does evil, it's because that person is being manipulated by a devil. In reality, the two forces responsible for good and evil are conscience and desire. Conscience is an internal force generated by the spiritual energy of the universe acting on the soul of a living being. We can choose to listen to our conscience, or we can ignore it using ideology, but the more we listen, the stronger conscience becomes. Strong conscience evokes goodwill, empathy, care, and concern. Care and concern evokes fairness, equity, and accountability in our interactions with others. Desire, on the other hand, is a self-serving force that is generated by the life entity within us. Life's primary goals are self-preservation and universal awareness, and in exchange life provides happiness. That is why our daily activities are primarily centered around a constant pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, without the balancing effect of a strong conscience, our desires will quickly corrupt our character, making us selfish, uncaring, unethical, and even evil people. 4. Support Black Financial Empowerment. One of the best ways to improve the Black African race is to work on Black financial independence and empowerment. Financial empowerment involves good money management as well as the support of Black-owned businesses. We exist in a capitalist world, but most of us don't really know how capitalism works, and because of our animistic nature we keep fighting for socialism. That, along with systemic racism, is the essence of Black financial dependence. Capitalism was born out of the basic exchange of goods, services, and labor for money. Today it's become a complex system optimized by unbalanced economic conditions, which means it works best when everyone is not in financial equilibrium. It even becomes more effective through psychological manipulation in the form of consumerism. That is the state of Black society today: poor, discontent consumers driven by the belief that acquiring physical things will make us happy. The only positive is it keeps the economy in motion. Since we'll never change the political systems in society unless we run our own countries, we'll have to learn to make capitalism work for us. Start in schools by learning how to create businesses instead of learning how to become good workers for someone else. Learn how to save money and invest it wisely. Avoid credit and debt, which only puts us in financial slavery to the banks. Support Black-owned businesses locally and nationally. Avoid bad-minded thoughts that may tell you that you're making another Black person rich while you're still poor. It took thousands of years to create our present condition, so it cannot change overnight. 5. Promote Black consciousness. Conscious Black people should always defend, protect, and promote Black consciousness, whether it's under attack from other races or our own ignorant and self-destructive people. It's not easy to swim against the current of popular culture, so those who do need all the support we can get. Recognize that there are different levels of Black consciousness. Some Black people are just waking up, while some have been awake for years. Some of us are more political militant or spiritual than others, but as long as the goal is the upliftment of the Black race, then we're all on the same wavelength. Never support anyone or anything that destroys our race. That includes Black people who dismiss the problems within our race and side with the biased ideologies of others because it makes them acceptable. Always confront racism, discrimination, and injustice in society, but also confront violence, gangsterism, and all other unethical behaviors of Black people in our own communities. Recognize that Black consciousness is not immune from corruption. There will always be people who will jump on the bandwagon when something is popular or profitable. It's just the mechanisms of life working its magic. If you don't know what real Black consciousness is, you might become disgruntled and disillusioned with those who profess to be conscious leaders. Black consciousness is not about seeking idols to follow. It's about self-improvement first, then allowing your mind to accept what makes sense, or you will quickly be led down the path of cultism. Once you find your truth, it's your duty to promote Black consciousness so that the general level of Black consciousness may also rise. Conclusion. Whether you're on the continent of Africa or in the diaspora, these 6 basic principles of Black consciousness are essential principles to uphold. Always honor and respect your African ancestry and the ancestors. Value your genetic characteristics. Increase your awareness by gaining knowledge. Choose spirituality over religion. Support Black financial empowerment. And always promote true Black consciousness. This is the only way that we as a people will rise above colonial influence and the indoctrinating effects of popular culture. Finally, always listen to your conscience. It will give you the mental strength and self-discipline you need to persevere through the ethically corrupt reality we exist in.
Okay, I don't think it could have been put no better. The only problem I had was just that one word, African. I'm not an African. But anyway, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We're going to, these principles were sound, and they were exact, and I'm pretty sure that we all need this kind of stuff. But let's look on the other side of the corner. Let's see what's going on over there. But before we do that, I want to talk to you one more time about your being conscious and resonating at a higher vibrational frequency. Now, I'm not a religious person, but I would like to use an analogy to try to describe for you how important it is for you to be conscious and resonate at a higher vibrational frequency. I want to tell you about a story that exists in a book called The Bible and about a character that they was calling Jesus Christ. Now, this guy had to be resonating at a high vibrational frequency because he was so irritating the heck out of the people that was around him. And what was extraordinary is when he went to his own hometown, where people have been knowing him all their life, they had a problem with him resonating at this high vibrational frequency. According to the story, he turned water into wine, he healed the sick, he raised the dead. And man, when he started resonating at that level of frequency, they took him out and killed him. Isn't that something? You will run into people who will tell you, because you know you have knowledge of self, and your conversation is at a higher level, a higher vibration, a higher frequency. And what these people want you to do is to come down to their level so that they can feel comfortable. However, you should never come down or lower your high vibrational frequency. You should always maintain the highest vibrational frequency that you can muster up because you want to remain super conscious. And this type of thing will irritate toxic people. So what are you supposed to do? You should get rid of toxic people. That is what you are supposed to do. We're going to look at this thing from a whole different perspective. Y'all,
you want support, Roller Rock Unfiltered? Be sure to join our Brain Defunct fan club. Every dollar that you give to us supports our daily digital show. There's only one daily digital show out here that keeps it black and keep it real. It's Roller Rock Unfiltered. Support the Roland Martin Unfiltered Daily Digital Show by going to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com. You can make this possible.
Jane, we've witnessed in the past week, Jane, we've witnessed Senator Tim Scott come out and talked about America, not racist America. Democrats fall right into the trap. Folks start going back and forth on this whole very issue here. And what is interesting to me is are the folks who want to get caught up, racist, not racist, not racist, racist, as opposed to what are the effects the policies are having on actual people?
Number one, the effects on people who look like me are to cause them tremendous fear because they know that within 30 years, and now it's about down to 20 years, we melanemic people will be a numerical minority in the United States of America. That's the way it is. And incidentally, this is not America. America is everything from the northernmost point of Canada to the southernmost point of South America, and we, in our arrogance, call it America, as if the 48 contiguous states, Alaska, Hawaii, and the islands off the southeastern coast of the United States are all that constitutes America. We've got to change our vocabulary. I'm an educator. Educators are engaged in the business of leading people out of ignorance. And I've been sitting here for the last about 30 minutes listening to total ignorance coming out of the mind of a person who's young enough to be taught better. And he needs to be re-educated. And the rest, and the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, that whole group of mostly white, fairly young men, of course, for me, everybody's young, but most of them are old enough to know better, but too damn young to care. And you cannot solve things by saying to people, my mind's made up, don't confuse me with facts. That's exactly what this young gentleman is doing, and that's exactly what most of us are doing most of the time in this country right now. We want to pretend that what we have is what we have described. It isn't. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. I'm one of the free, and that young man has to become brave. He has to be brave, and his mother has to be extremely brave if she's going to live in this country, which is getting increasingly racist in its behaviors and its attitudes because of the fear of white people that when people of color get power, they're going to want to treat us the way we have treated them. That is the major problem in the United States right now, is white fear of retribution. I think we could give up that fear. I have watched people go through this exercise, the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise, and after it's over, I have heard them say, I had no idea. I will not abuse people. I will not make them feel the way I felt when I was on the bottom. I never knew how it felt to be on the bottom before. Now I've found out how that feels. I will never do something that will make someone feel the way I felt for just an hour and a half. I think we have misjudged the intelligence and the humanity of a whole lot of people of color, and that's why we're afraid of them.
Greg Carr, the last week and a half, we've listened to Fox News and all of these other folks, these conservatives, whine about critical race theory. They're running their mouths. Oh, my God, critical race theory is Marxist, and it's destroying America. Yet Nikki Haley's out there. Yet when you ask them to define it, they can't even define it, Greg. They're just spouting a talking point.
Well, that's the whole point. The whole point. Professor Elliott has, you know, and it's good to be in community with you. And hey, Reese, we definitely missed you, sis. You know, having followed your work for many years, and certainly the blue-eyed, brown-eyed test, many of us have seen that the one of the videotapes of the exercise, I think it was Oprah you were engaged in showing at that time. You know, you make a very important point when it comes to language. The power of whiteness in many ways lies in its invisibility. And it was interesting, as CJ, as you know, kind of were talking, you drug Professor Elliott into whiteness. She used the word white. It's very difficult to, as she would know better than all of us, to jailbreak that language. But as my friend, the philosopher Lucius Outlaw down at Vanderbilt often says, I can call that bus coming toward me the wind, but if I step in front of it, the wind will run me over. In other words, there is the effect that language has in a social reality. So, CJ, I feel you, brother, when you say that no white person or no person who has been marked white has the right to say anything to how we try to navigate being black in a society where whiteness or the concept of whiteness is the norm. This is James Baldwin now. At the same time, though, brother, I would have to say that you probably more than all of us as a Gen Zer understand the power of branding. You're a digital native. You haven't been alive at a time when we didn't have cell phones or YouTube or the internet. And so what we're seeing is the weaponized ignorance. And Professor Elliott, you're fighting against it, absolutely. In the real tradition, there was a journal out of Boston many years ago called Race Traitor. And you probably were familiar with it and knew it. You know, their motto was treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity. In other words, we have to dismantle this hierarchical thinking. But what we're seeing instead, Roland, to the point that you're raising, people are using critical race theory as a term. And very few people, including people who would be called critical race theorists, know much, if anything, about the origins. Critical race theory comes out of the law, legal studies, law schools, really, and its roots are in something called critical legal studies, which goes back to the late 50s, early 1960s. It's really a dialogue about the nature of how we organize human societies and what are the standards by which we'll live. And that includes the law, that includes ethics and morals, and it really is a critique of the inflexibility of some of the categories. Over the years, Derrick Bell, very important in this dialogue, the late Derrick Bell and others, began to use that critique of the law and frame it in the context of race and saying, for example, Derrick Bell would say, let's do a thought exercise. What if instead of overturning Plessy versus Ferguson, Brown versus Board of Education had affirmed Plessy versus Ferguson and said, you know what? Separate was never equal, so let's make separate equal. Give them the exact same money you're giving the white schools. Now, that was a thought exercise designed in some ways to do some of the work that Professor Elliott has been doing, namely jailbreak how we think about hierarchy. That's where critical race theory kind of emerged. It's about narratives. It's about posing different kind of questions, forcing people to think. That is exactly not what these white nationalists, and I'm using white not because they are white. We're all Africans if you look at the parents of everybody on the ball. But I'm using white as the social reality that has real-world consequences, just like if I change the name of the bus to the wind, I'd still step out in front of getting run over. I can call it melanated, demelanated, whatever, but the cop is still going to say, you're melanated. Hands up. Boom. My point is I'll still suffer because of the concepts. We have to figure out a way to tune out the distractions. CRT is the new socialism, critical race theory. Left is the new N-word in many ways. Because we say left, what the signal is, I mean, you know, them people who are over there with those black people. When you say, platforms are the new soapbox. People are engaging in word war as proxy for real war. Meanwhile, people who say, I'm voting for Trump because I'm an evangelical, and Trump is a symptom. Let's be very clear. The Republican Party has been the home of white nationalism for quite some time. People are now rallying behind Liz Cheney when Liz Cheney's policy record is just like Donald Trump's. But people are saying, well, she's a woman. No, stop being distracted. What you're seeing is these folks are killing themselves to preserve something that isn't real. They are literally picking their imagined whiteness over their lives. And so rather than try to argue with them, I'm going to leave that to the Jane Elliott of the world. Go with God. Sister Elliott, go with God. As an African in this world, I don't care whether the United States survives. What I care about is whether humanity can survive America.
All right, folks, that's not what my unfiltered video is, just one moment.
It's time to be smart. When we control our institutions, we win.
We win.
This is the most important news show on television of any racial background. Y'all put $2, $3, $4, $5, $10, $15, $20, $30 on this and keep this going. What you've done, Roland, since this crisis came out in full bloom. Anybody watching this, tell your friends, go back and look at the last 2 weeks, especially of Roland Martin Unfiltered. I mean, hell, go back and look at the last 2 days. You've had sitting United States Senators today, Klobuchar and Harris. Whatever you have that you have, you can bring to Roland Martin Unfiltered to support it. Please do, because this information may literally save your life.
Watch Roland Martin Unfiltered daily at 6 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope, or go to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com.
Support the Roland Martin Unfiltered Daily Digital Show by going to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com. Our goal is to get 20,000 of our fans contributing $50 each for the whole year. You can make this possible. RolandMartinUnfiltered.com.
All right, everybody, we're back. Now, I just want to... throw that out there on the flip side, some more to consider, because we are talking about the black principles of black consciousness. And I give you an analogy only involving a character by the name of Jesus Christ from a book called The Bible, just to demonstrate vibrations and frequency. And one of the questions is, what is knowledge of self? Now, it's a very, very powerful thing, and I would like to give you another personal analogy of something that happened to me one time. And you would discover, because a lot of you all are employed on jobs and stuff, and you got supervisors, and these supervisors, in a lot of cases, they look just like you. But you have all kind of problems out of them, and I've experienced the same thing. Think about this for a moment. Okay, now, your job involves you doing a specific task. When I was employed for this company, my job was to operate a stacking machine. And what I had learned to do is I had mastered that machine and ran it with total precision. And the rumor started going around the plant that this guy, there had never been anybody over there to run this machine better than this guy. But keep in mind, I have what? A supervisor. Now, for what reason in the world do I need someone to come over there where I am and supervise them? For what? If I'm running this machine, I'm doing it better than anybody in the history of the planet, with total blinding precision, vibration at 175% high vibrational frequency. But I have an idiot that came over and told me, say, you know what, there's never been anybody run that machine like you. But don't forget, I'm your supervisor. Oh, okay. So I asked him, I said, well, you over here, what are you going to supervise? Well, no, I'm not going to supervise. You're doing a good job, but I'm just, you know, I was just saying, you know, I'm in, you know, I'm a supervisor and over the department over here. I said, well, for what reason under the sun did you feel compelled to come and tell me that? Well, I'm just saying, you know, they hired me. You ain't got to take my word for it. You can go ask the general manager. He'll tell you I'm the supervisor. I said, well, okay. Well, let me ask you this. Can you operate this machinery? And if so, I'll step out of the way and show me what you can do. I'm the supervisor. So, once again, when you are conscious, your duties are to become more and more and more and more conscious. You need to learn everything you could possibly learn about yourself. You are dealing with the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror. Whatever it is that you do, you want to do it to perfection. You want to engage in the big threes, reading, writing, and arithmetic, because the human brain is just like a bucket with a hole in the bottom. You put water in it, and the water just slowly leaks out. So you have to continue to put worthwhile information in the brain. And you're going to always run into people who are vibrating at a very low frequency of vibration. And what they are going to attempt to do is to try to knock you off of your frequency level, or to drag you down to their level in order for them to feel comfortable. And you cannot allow that. And if you're going to be vibrating at a high frequency, you want to deal with other people who are vibrating at the same frequency that you are. Because if you continue to associate yourself and you're vibrating high and these people are vibrating at a very low frequency, it's going to cause damage. You're going to experience a certain amount of damage. So you have to get rid of that. You cannot allow that kind of thing to go on. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll delve down in some more of this thing. Y'all hold your hats. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, we're back. Now, let us continue. One of the questions is, was there a real place called Lemuria? And I'll just answer that for you right off point blank. Yes. It did exist. And instead of going over it and telling you all about it, what we're going to do is we are going to post the videos that have the whole thing so you can see this thing for yourself. What is occurring now in our world is information is coming out 9,000. And this new information that's coming out is going against the grain of everything a lot of people have ever been taught. One thing I found out about a lot of people is they do not know how to be objective. They won't say, well, look, I don't know that, but I am willing to listen to you tell it to me so that I will know it. No, they're not going to do that. What they're going to do is not know it, and at the same time, have no defense against it. I have nothing that they compare it to, but they're going to attempt to tell you that you're wrong or in some sort of debate with absolutely nothing in their skull. Now, to me, this type of thing is a phenomenon. You got people that will do just that. And then they have this little thing in the back of their brain that I'm going to lead you someplace, which is, to me, is like a phenomenon. And then when you ask them, well, wait a minute, if you're going to lead me and I have knowledge of self, could you at least tell me who you are without telling me your name? And then you get silence and a blank stare. And then I'm telling you, so-and-so. I'm trying to figure out, well, what? If you say, well, the stuff you're talking about, I don't believe that. Okay, can you show me exactly what it is that you do believe, and then we'll compare the two. How about that? I ain't got nothing to prove, nothing to know better. I know what I know, and I know, I say, you do. I say, because what I'm looking at is quite extraordinary. My presence is the doggone thing I've ever seen. And so you will discover that you will run into people like that, okay? But don't be alarmed. What your job is to continue to do the research, do the reading, do the writing, do the arithmetic, do the investigation, turn over all the stones so you'll have all of the information to the point where you just walk in there and just lay it on the table. Now, there are people who will not allow you to put the facts on the table with the truth attached to it. They won't allow you to tell them the truth. Now, this type of phenomenon, and this is a phenomenon for an individual to not only do they not know, but they don't want to know. And at the same time, they want to appear to be an authority on something that they know absolutely nothing about, but they're not going to allow you to come in and tell the truth and put the facts on the table. Now, one of the questions is, how do you deal with the county recorder's office? We're going to throw a little bit of that out there because we're going to have to deal with what is the law and where did it come from. Now, your courthouse in your city is a public facility. It's open to the general public. And when you go in there to file documents with the county recorder, job is to file the document. But in a lot of cases, what we're finding out, and keep in mind now, the county recorder is not a judge. The county recorder is not a lawyer. The county recorder is not an attorney. Their job is to file the document. Now, you don't want to argue with them, because I've had people tell me when I went down there, they told me they couldn't file this, you know, and I need to get an attorney, and asking as if they're some type of judge or something. I said, well, did you get their name? So that's the only thing you should have came out of there with, is their name. They didn't file the documents, just get their name. You got the address to the building. All you need is the name, okay? And when you come back, then we'll do the rest. But anyway, we're going to go to another commercial, and then we'll come back. We're going back on down in this thing. Y'all hold your hat for a minute. We will be right back.
Hello, everybody. Okay? This is Tahaka again. This is a reminder of the remedies available to you in this country. A private man or woman can live a debt-free life if you choose, and that includes private banking. The use of your proper status in commerce is a fantastic tool to use. Request my free report at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Instead of setting up a will that will probably end up in probate, why don't you set up your private trust? Exercise your secured party and creditor status. Contact me at my website and set yourself free. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. TahakaDebtElimination.org. Get out of debt. Now is the time for you to set yourself free. Peace.
Says here the Facts on File Encyclopedia of Word and Phrase Origins, 4th edition. Definitions and origins of more than 15,000 words and expressions by Robert Hendrickson. Says here the N-word. I'm not going to say the full word, especially so we don't get this video taken down. When used by white person to describe a black or African-American person, this is probably the most offensive, hateful, hurtful term in the language today. Like Negro, the word derives ultimately from the Latin Niger, black. It is not an Americanism, the first recorded use of the N-word being in a 1786 poem by Robert Burns, although variations on it include, and this has Negar here and the rest of them as you see here, are recorded 2 centuries before then. Though African Americans do commonly use the word in different ways among themselves, and that N-word got luck, you wouldn't believe. Blacks rarely, if ever, do so in the presence of whites, right? So-called blacks and whites. This is crayon color talk here, guys. Since the O.J. Simpson murder trial in 1995, when evidence of its use by a detective witness was introduced, it often has been euphemistically called the N-word. The N-word has also been an offensive derogatory term applied to Indians, okay? That's what I wanted to show you. It was applied to Indians as well as so-called blacks up until recent times. All right, over here we got just another quick reference. Historical quotes from Oxford Dictionary. Yes, this was in the Oxford Dictionary. One of the definitions says, for the N-word, a dark-skinned person of any origin. An early U.S. use, usually with reference to American Indians. Again, usually, originally, in early use, it was first applied to who? To American Indians. American Indians, again, from the Oxford Dictionary, one of the very old versions.
Okay, we're back. All right, now we're going to take one more little quick break, and when we come back, we'll be going back on down in this thing. I'm trying to give my guest a chance to get in here. Brother Yoel, he told me he was going to call in, so I'm waiting on him. But anyway, Let's deal with this for a minute. Y'all hold your
All right, so in order to make this video make sense, I have to recap for a second, because some of you all are new here. But I've also timestamped this video just in case you're not new and you want to jump straight into the point of this particular video. This platform, Remy Remedies, the sole mission here is to help people heal, to promote healing. And that includes physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, and ancestral healing. The past few videos have been geared towards physical healing, reversing and preventing disease. But today, this is going to be my first ancestral and spiritual healing video. Now, I did picture my first ancestral and healing video a little different, a whole lot different than what I'm bringing you today. But I was divinely guided to do it, so that's what I'm doing. Since you're new, let me tell you, my physical journey led me to a spiritual journey. And that spiritual journey opened doors that allowed me to connect with my ancestors. My ancestors provide, protect, and they guide me and my family. And I honor them, I respect them, and I make sure that I'm fulfilling my soul mission. I can talk about finding your soul mission or your purpose here in this physical world in another video if you want. So since about October 2020, I've been working almost every day building my family tree, doing my genealogy, and learning about my people, the cultures, the beliefs, the traditions. And I was learning this for the very first time. I know some of you new viewers might be wondering, well, why didn't your parents teach you this? And I'll give you two words just to sum it up really quick because it runs so much deeper than that. Paper genocide. See, because of the colonizers, my family was forced to reclassify as mulatto and Negro and colored, and then to African American and Black. How many more times are they going to reclassify us? All in an effort to keep us hidden away from the truth. And my family, we're not the only ones. There was millions upon millions of families who looked like the so-called African American or the so-called Black person to be reclassified or be taken out.
Without their knowledge, census takers in the late 1800s listed them as Negro or Black, removing their Native American identities with the stroke of a pen.
And in Sussex County, they had Indians on them, and there's copies of it up to 1930, where they had crossed the Indian out and put nig in there. And they did the same thing in Bridgeton. Same thing they put, went from C's, like I said, to M's, and mulatto, to Black. By 1900s, they were all Black. BL, every one of them. I'm still upset about that. And I was probably in my 25 or 30 before I realized it.
See, we are the indigenous aboriginals of the Americas. And we weren't all wiped out by disease or war. We never left. We're still here. But you wouldn't know that because of the reclassification and the paper genocide from Walter Plecker and all of the other humanless beings who forced the narrative that all of us are from Africa. Now, I'm not going to jump into the details about the Out of Africa theory, paper genocide, and all the things that have happened since colonization, but I do have a playlist for that, the Hidden American History playlist that you can check out right here. And I've also shared my personal journey, the beginning of this journey, in this video right here. And then I also talked about it again in this video right here. So if you want to know more about the history and that side of things, then please check out those videos. But in this particular video, I want to stay focused on one thing, and I'll get to that in just a little bit. So I said all of that to bring you into this one particular point right here. So once I discovered the truth about myself, my family, my ancestors, I dove right into the indigenous community, connecting, learning from so many people here on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. I found cousins, I've made some amazing friends, and I've learned so much. And like all things in this beautiful universe, balance must occur. I'm not going to make a general statement about every tribe and every nation, but from what I've learned, my ancestors believed in balance. They didn't believe that something is good and something is bad, but that it just has to occur in order for balance to take place. So once I started to learn about the scammers and the money-hungry people in the indigenous community, it came as no surprise. See, I was ancestrally and spiritually led to make this video today, to shed light on this problem and to provide a solution. And I'm sharing that with you because, I'll be honest, I personally did not want to make this video because of violence. I'm sharing something good that can help the people, but I also know that that negative energy, or that so-called negative energy, is going to follow. I just didn't want to deal with the energy, the so-called negative energy. And I actually shared that in the previous video. And that's something that I am definitely working through, because again, this is my mission to help people. You know, you just have to deal with things along the way, but I'm divinely protected and divinely covered, so I'm good. That's why I'm here right now. So the bottom line is that there's some scammers, some straight up scammers, some straight up so-called indigenous people with agendas that don't favor us. They're telling some of y'all that you can pay your way to become an Indian. You can pay to be an Indian. And I use the word Indian because that's the legal term, all right? If I was talking to another indigenous person, I would refer to my tribes. I would not say Indian. So when I say Indian, please understand what I'm implying when I use that word. So I don't care what they're trying to sell you, what they're trying to tell you, you simply cannot do it that way. There's a few points that I want to make right now. First is that everybody has the right to self-identify. If you choose to self-identify as Aniyanwiya, Tapani, or Powhatan, for example, and to identify as one does not mean that you have to join a tribe or a nation. As a matter of fact, your family, your bloodline, that is your tribe. And for some people, that's all they need. So when these people try to sell you these hopes and dreams and you don't look anything like them, or better yet, you don't even know them personally. So when they're out here selling you this stuff that you can pay your way to become an Indian, or you can get these tribal IDs and have all of these rights or this protection from the United States government, then you're starting to tread in very dangerous waters. Now on the flip side of that, there are nations that you can join if in fact you have that bloodline, if you're family to that nation or that tribe. But you must meet the qualifications. You must have the bloodline that connects you to that particular tribe or nation. You can't buy your way in, folks. Now, there are some exceptions. For example, adoption. People have been adopted into the tribe. But for the sake of this video, I just want to keep it really simple. These scammers out here, they're identifying as indigenous aboriginals. And they're targeting you. They're targeting you because they know that you're new to the community. They know that you want to have that sense of belonging. You want to belong to that tribe or to that nation. And that maybe you're looking for a way to be protected from the laws and rules of the colonizers. They know this. And they use it. They use it to their advantage, to their financial advantage. And the scamming part is not even the saddest part. But what's really hurtful is that by associating yourself with these people, you could very well be involving you and your family with criminal activity.
Okay. All right. I hope y'all got something that out of that. I see I have a caller at area code 312. I'm going to open up the line. Air code 312, you're on the air. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, it's on, brother. This is Yoel from Underground Bookstore in Chicago.
Welcome. Okay, fantastic, man. What I'm going to have to do, brother Yoel, is I'm going to have to, because I got an extensive book list here, and I'm going to lead it into the broadcast later on. But what I'm going to have to do is write down these authors and these books and send this stuff over to you in an email. And so that way tonight you won't have to do no scribbling. I'm going to, tomorrow I'll write them all down and send it to you in an email so that you can check and see if you already got them. If you ain't got them, you can add them to your book list and add them to your store. And I'll be reading
okay.
this broadcast. Welcome, 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 my brother. And I don't know how much of the broadcast you've already heard, but I would like to ask you if you would give us your opinion. But before I do that, let me let the listening audience know the number to dial into this broadcast is 515-605-9757. That's 515-605-9757. And if you got something to say, press 1 on your phone there to give me an indication that you have something to say, and I'll open up the phone line so you can get in. Okay, now, Brother Yoel,
I ain't going nowhere, remember? I just went around the corner. Yes.
Could you give us your take on what it means to be conscious?
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever it was in the past, in the last 12 months, it's changed in the last 12 months because of the so-called pandemic that's taken place. I saw the actions of people that I thought were conscious, and to only find out that I had to take another look at this, what you call conscious thing, and redefine it because, and what I mean by that is some people who I know, I got customers who read, and they read nothing but a history, stuff, information that has been hidden or whatever the case is, when they do research on our hidden history and what, and all of the books that's regarding our history. But however, many of those people fail to see and make the connection between the history and the politics of that same enemy that tampered with and altered, hid, concealed, or whatever our history. They fail to make the connection between that history and the politics of that same enemy when it comes to this pandemic thing, because they went out and they believed the hype, and they went out and took that vaccine. And some of them had problems, and some of them were just waiting to see what's going to happen to them. But that's what caused me to take another look or reexamine this thing called conscious community, black conscious community anyway. Now I look at that as, you know, I've looked at it a lot more carefully, and I see that what they were missing is that they didn't understand that they won, that they had an enemy. Number two, that they were at war. And number three, they weren't looking at, so with that, they weren't looking at the holistic view or from a holistic vantage point or angle at our complete picture of what we're dealing with here. Because it's more than just these people treat us badly and hide our history and all of that kind of stuff, you know, and so it's bigger than that. It's more, and we can't understand the conspiratorial side when it comes to what he will conspire to do. We forget that he conspired to plot and kill Brother Malcolm. Patrice Lumumba's death was being planned when he was invited over to the White House from the Congo to D.C. with President Kennedy to have dinner while they were plotting his death on his return to the Congo. So we forget that they would go through lengths of stuff or how in-depth on how far they would go to eliminate or erase any kind of problem that they might have. So when this pandemic came, many of those people didn't know whether they should take this vaccine, coming from two people who, as they have known fully who these people were, Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates, they would know that no way should you do anything with on the word of those two individuals. If they say take something, you shouldn't take it. If they say go left, for instance, you go right. Because those guys, if not, they just showed you who they are recently. They've been this way for a long time, okay? And for those who understand what I'm talking about when I'm talking about Anthony Fauci, they know he goes back to at least the 80s, when early 80s, when this AIDS thing epidemic was out here, and he was pushing that AZT. And the AZT was actually the thing that was killing people because it was toxic. And they've been knowing it was toxic since 1993 when they were treating people, 1953, I'm sorry, when they were treating people with it for cancer. And it was toxic and it was killing people, you know. He's been doing a bunch of those things like this, similar to this, ever since. And probably he goes back even farther than that. You know, so he's not the scientist that we should have been trying to follow anywhere. Bill Gates, of course, family history, not just him, his daddy and his granddaddy, all been given and contributing money to Planned Parenthood, which was created by Margaret Sanger, of course, originally called the American Birth Control League, And so they gave money to that organization because that organization's mission was to abort black babies, give black women an opportunity to abort black babies. And mainly because they saw back in the early 20th century, in early 1900s, that their population was declining and yours was multiplying. Black folks, or if you call them Negroes, whatever you want to call them, whatever name you want to play with respect to semantics, but our people, birth rate was multiplying and theirs was declining. So that worried them. So yes, Bill Gates has also been pushing depopulation, talking about the earth is overcrowded and whatnot. So what you think he want to do? Do you think he want to save you when he's been talking about the earth has been overpopulated for years? He want to get the planet down to, according to him, from 7.1 billion people on the planet down to 300 million. Now, that's, I don't know the math that well, but that sounds like almost 95 to 98% of the damn people he want to get rid of. So... So saying that to say that these people didn't recognize them for who they are, so people like Renoko Rashidi, who had put in 40 years uncovering our history across the globe, did not recognize that them people did not care about him making it back to Egypt to do some more research and come back in here and report, come back to us and report that research. So he didn't understand that they didn't want him to make that mission. So he took that vaccine before he left here and ended up not being able to return here, but only as a dead body after that. So many like him have done that. Those of our intellectuals, and if we understand what they're supposed to do, some of them have been taking the vaccine. Now, that's a serious problem, people, because why? Because, as Dr. Clark said, that the role of an intellectual is like that of a mother to a child. They must tell you where you came from, where you are, where you still must go. He didn't say just in history of where you came from and where you are, where you still must go. That maybe he should have expounded on and told you all the areas that they should tell you this, but they're a mother to the... Being a mother to a child is a close relationship, first of all. So our intellectuals should have had a close relationship with us, and they should have did the research, went out and collected and gathered all the facts on what was going on, and then came back and told us whether we should or should not take that vaccine. Did our intellectuals tell us that? I don't care how much you like them, people. you know, the question you should be asking yourself is, did they do that? Did your Cornel West, your Henry Louis Gates, your whoever you consider to be our intellectuals, whether spiritually, religiously, or historically, or whatever you want to call them, did they bring us back the information and tell us whether we should or should not take that vaccine? No, they didn't. At least I don't recall any of them telling us that. So not to get too far off into that, but the bottom line is it all speaks to what you're talking, the subject that you just, the question you asked me, conscious, what does that mean? And I had to redefine that and say that basically my people are fallen victims because they do not fully understand the full scope or ramifications of the enemy we have and what he will do to prevent or to sustain or to keep his lie going, you know. So that's kind of my answer right there, Sahaka.
Okay.
So we have to redefine conscious.
Well, I'm inclined to say that you are absolutely correct, and that's why I'm over here plugging away, trying to give analogies and trying to show our people what it's going to take and what they're facing, because in my opinion, we're all conscious. You know, if you are unconscious, that means that you land down somewhere and you stretch that. But the thing is, how high are we resonating? How high is our vibrational frequency resonating? Now, when it came to the vaccine, I had YouTube threaten to shut me down in 5 minutes because I posted a video that simply asked 25 questions. And the title of the video is, if you still have friends and family members that believe that we are in a pandemic, ask them these following questions. And I received an email from YouTube and told me that I, by asking these questions, I could very well injure someone. And if I do this again, we will close down your account. Well, I'm just, okay, you're going to shut down my account for asking a question? I can see if I was making a statement, but I wasn't making no statement. The video simply asked 25 questions. Now, since they did that, I said, well, okay, let me resonate at a little bit more higher vibration. And what I did uncover is a sister that went into a clinic to get checked for the vaccine, checked for the virus, and there was too many people in there, and she couldn't get waited on after she had signed the book. And so she said, well, I'll leave and I'll come back another day. However, she didn't go back. And she got an email from the clinic followed up by a letter saying that she had tested positive for the virus. And then
okay.
I had personal people that I know that actually went into the hospital here in Jacksonville, Florida, and was able to get out of there because they told me, say, I know they were trying to take my life. I know they were trying to kill me because with the stuff that they was giving me up in there, every time they come around in my room, I was feeling weaker and weaker and worse and worse. I got to the point I said, look, I'm leaving. I don't want nothing else you got. I'm getting out of here. And in order for you to leave out of the hospital, you had to sign this form, and this girl told me, say, there's no way for you to fill out the form without saying that you got a virus. I said, you got to be kidding. She said, I looked for a spot for me to check somewhere to write or something to say, well, look, I don't have a virus. There's no way. is fashion, and the questionnaire is fashion to the point where you have to admit you have a virus, whether or not you do or not. It was a most amazing set of circumstances. I said, okay. So they up to it again. Then I called some friends of mine. Let me see. I think it was Virginia. I think it was Detroit. I know it was California and Texas. And I said, look, this is what I need y'all to do for me. I need you to call the funeral home in your city and ask them, since the pandemic has struck, has y'all business increased? And every last one of them told me no. And in a lot of cases, they told me the funeral director told me, well, actually, the business has dropped. I said, okay, now this is what I need you to do. When you get your time, on your own time, I said, I want you to get out, get in your car, and drive by the cemeteries in your city, because if there's a pandemic and all this stuff is supposed to be going on, like the media says going on, then the cemetery should be full. You should hear sirens and ambulances all day and all night, and every last one of them told me, hey, man, when you ride by this dog, it's quiet, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And when Saturday do come, when they have a funeral, we might have one or two funerals, but there's nothing pandemic about it. It's the same old, same old. So me personally, I deal with nutrition, and I believe it's a wonderful thing that you, if you can eat a piece of food a day, if it ain't nothing but a grape or an orange or an apple, that's fantastic. I deal with the different natural products and stuff that I take that comes directly from nature on a daily basis. And tip-top shape. I get a whole lot done. I'm thinking clearly and sharp and stuff. And, you know, I just happen to have forgot that it was a pandemic based on what I was doing. I was seeing people running around and running. I got the vaccine. I have an appointment, and I said, "Well, okay. Well, you need to get the vaccine. You can't play with this kind of thing. You need to get the vaccine." I said, "Well, okay. You probably got a point there, but could you please tell me exactly what is in the vaccine?" Mm-hmm. I don't know that. Them doctors know what they're doing. Man, I'm telling you, man, you can't put, man, I said, who do you know personally that has died from a pandemic? Well, I don't know nobody. But, man, I'm telling you, man, you know, man, you got to look at TV, man. I said, okay. So you are reacting to a television pandemic. Now, let me explain something to you. If you want to see what a pandemic looks like, go online, go to YouTube, or either go to Google and type in the bubonic plague or the Black Death of Europe, and you will see what a pandemic looks like. See, we got a whole lot of what I call armchair quarterbacks. They react to a whole lot of stuff, but nobody engaged in reading, writing, arithmetic, investigation, and research for their own self. They don't know how their body functions. They haven't, you ask a whole lot of them, well, what's your blood type? Well, I don't know that. And so they have to mentally rely on somebody else to tell them something about the body they walk around in every day. And tell them about their mental state when the head is sitting right between the shoulders on top of their body. But they've been programmed to believe that what we have to do is lend our body and our minds over to somebody else to diagnose and tell us how we're supposed to feel. That'll be. But anyway, because I get worked up about this thing, because I have a real bad problem, Brother Yoel, with pure D downright stupidity. I really do, man. But anyway, let's move right on along here, man. Because I don't want to get worked up about this thing here. Now, I have a question for you, and I was saving this for you, and I got an answer for myself. But let's say that you was going to be the one to create the first man or woman on earth. Where, on what land, in what area will your creation begin? That's the question.
Okay.
It was left up to you.
You said on earth as it is right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and my where I would do that would be biased right now without other additional information to make that call right now off the top of my head, knowing what I know, I would probably make that a place where the weather is warm, first of all. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and probably year round, of course, and probably a place where it is not has been polluted as much. Now, whether or not that would be some place like in Africa or South America, I don't know too much. They don't tell us too much about South America, so I don't know a whole lot about what's going on down in South America like that. And so a lot of that history we're not getting, and what the present status of that country is right now either. But it would have to be somewhere warm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you still ain't creating that.
Okay. Well, I would probably say being biased right now, maybe it probably would be, like I said, maybe some places close to the equator. And that would probably be either in Africa or the northern portion of South America.
Okay. All right, that's close enough. One more. I'm gonna let y'all get hooked with that. All right, now,
okay.
What I would like for you to do right now, since we're down here in the middle of this broadcast, could you tell us how the listening audience can get a hold of two books and stuff that you're promoting and where you are up there in Chicago? Just in case they fly out there or got relatives up there and stuff and where you at and how to get a hold to you, your books.
Oh, okay. Great. The name of the bookstore, my bookstore is Underground Bookstore, and that's in 1727 East 87th Street in Chicago, Illinois, okay? 1727 East 87th Street in Chicago, Illinois. And you can email me your request on whatever book you're looking for at theundergroundbookstore@gmail.com or undergroundbookstore@gmail.com. undergroundbookstore@gmail.com. And make that request and with whatever title you're looking for. It's specifically, it's hard to get books too, but any kind of book, whether it's about black authors or African so-called born in America and all of that, or by Caucasians, whatever book you're looking for. So some people like to peg us as dealing with just Afrocentric books, but no, we deal with a lot more than Afrocentric books. But I like to deal with hard-to-get books, too, hard-to-find books, so I like to find those for people, too. So those are the places that that's where they can find me at.
Okay, you want to give them a number that they can call?
Oh, yes, telephone number, sorry, 773-768-8869. 773-768-8869. That's the phone number to the store. You can call us. We open from Monday through Saturday, 6 days a week. Those hours may be changing soon, though, because I'm thinking that maybe I might want to try to get a little bit more time off and regroup. Right now, I only have one day off, and that's Sunday. So, but right now, for the it's from Monday through Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday.
Okay. I want to ask some, because we was talking about consciousness and high vibrational frequency. And I want to make this little statement here. A lot of people don't understand that water has a certain amount of intelligence. Now, case in point, you can take, and I want y'all to conduct this experiment now. You can take a glass of water, and you cut your stereo on, and you can put on some hip-hop, you can put on some R&B, you can put on some rock, you can put on some acid rock or what have you, and set that jar there in front of them speakers and play you a song. And after you get through with that, then take that glass of water and carry it in there and put it in the freezer and let it freeze. Now, you're going to need a microscope after you freeze it, and I want you to look in that water through that microscope, and you will discover that there's all kind of crazy going on in the water that's in the ice that you can see. But now we'll get another glass of water and set in front of the same stereo. And now this time we're going to deal with Bach, Beethoven, and symphony and smooth orchestra music. And when the song is over with, we're going to take that glass and put it in the refrigerator, and we're going to freeze that. And then look in the through the microscope and look in the water, and you will discover that it's a whole different ball game in the water. Very intelligent. Now, the body is, scientists say the body is made up of, 95% water, and it can be reduced to a whole little small portion of everything else that's left. But we can live a long time without a lot of things, but we have a hard time with that hydrogen and oxygen because of the design of the body. And so water, that's part of your knowledge of self, and it should be added on to your vibrational frequency when you are resonating at a higher vibrational frequency. Because when we're talking about knowledge of self, Brother Yoel, I don't know if you heard this part that we delivered, but when you're talking about knowledge of self, and being conscious, we have people who are, in my opinion, everybody is conscious. Because if you wasn't conscious, you'd be laying flat somewhere. That means you're unconscious. And so when you're talking about consciousness, we got people walking around, they're conscious. They're consciously awoke. The next thing is awareness. So now we're talking about an elevation of consciousness, and we're talking about resonating at a high vibrational frequency of consciousness. And that's where the knowledge comes in at. That's, we're dealing with knowledge of self. We're dealing with reading, writing, and arithmetic. We can be dealing with his story. We can be dealing with our ancient story. We can be dealing with geometry, geography, all of it, anthropology, the whole nine, and it all contributes to your higher vibrational frequency that you resonate at as a conscious individual. So I just wanted to add that in. Now, my next question to you is, could you tell me what is your take on dealing with people who are toxic?
Okay. I think when you talk about people who are toxic, you're talking about people who are what some people would call negative. Okay? They believe everything that is negative been fed to them by whatever means or media that they've received it from. And they, because it's just like you're trying to think, or as they say, positively or good thoughts, then, and they are thinking negative thoughts, then that individual becomes toxic to you because it's going to bring your vibration down if you at any point allow any of what they're saying to get in your head with respect to what they are saying, okay? So those people are toxic, okay? It doesn't take a whole lot of rocket science to know that, but when you know, it's like I had a couple of friends who they ran with each other. They liked to run with each other, but they would argue with each other all damn day long, backwards and forwards, okay? And, you know, it's kind of hard to stay in your zone, especially if you want that to be in a higher vibration, that higher vibration. We're dealing with somebody that's running with you all day long, and you're fighting with them over stuff in many cases that doesn't really make make any difference. But that person is I mean, it's like Patti LaBelle said it this way. She said in her book, Don't Block Your Blessings. When you're talking about blocking your blessings, you allow somebody toxic to bring your vibration down or allow what they're saying to get in your head, then they automatically then cause you now mentally to block your own blessings from that which is coming your way or that which is going good for you. It stops the minute you let that fear, that doubt in. Okay? And people who thrive off of fear and doubt, even when you're dealing with your enemy, you can't be fearful and doubtful like that. Okay? Other than that, you're kind of defeating yourself because you don't already believe you done bought the fear factor into your head. And so therefore, you know, how you going to win something and you fearful already? That, you know, you can't, it doesn't go together. That individual, whoever or wherever it comes from, is toxic to you. And what you're attempting to try to do, if you're attempting to try to be positive and raise your vibration, that's what I think, Tahaka.
Okay.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Hold on.
So.
All right. Now, I heard every word you said, and you're absolutely correct. But I think in the case of our people, it's a little bit more severe. I had a situation where I was employed on a job, and what I was doing was at the early stages of me doing an investigation on our ancient story. Involving Africa, nothing but Africa, and the countries in Africa, and what was going on over there. And what I was doing was, I had the book, and then went out and bought the books about a ton. And I had them in here and was stacking them up in boxes and stuff, and I said, well, I'm going to get me some lumber, and I'm going to build me a bookcase, because I'm a carpenter by trade. And so I did just that. But during the process, what I would do is get the brothers and sisters out there on the job where I work at, and I would try to teach them from what I had learned from the books. And they would all sit there, and nobody would ask ask any questions. And white folks, they'll come out there too. The engineers, they'll come out there and listen to every word. I was totally bold, loud, and confident in everything I was saying. And it was about something that our people had wrote. And the books, the authors, and everything looked like me and our ancient story and all of this stuff that was not being taught in any college or school or university and all of that. And after it was all over with, everybody going by their business. But I had one engineer, white guy. He came to me, he said, you know what? He said, there's no doubt in my mind that you know what you're talking about. He said, I don't even notice this stuff, and I know that you're telling the truth about what you're saying, and I don't even know it. He said, but I'm going to tell you something. When it comes to talking to these folks that you're talking to, you're wasting your time. I said, okay, man. Now, what they were doing is they were sitting there listening to me. Every word I got to say wasn't no sister trying to challenge nothing, because I was shooting straight from the hip, straight out the book, with it in my hand, sitting right in front of them, so we can't do nothing about that. But after the meeting was over, what they'll do is go over there to the white folks and take me and drag me down the street, drag me through the ditch and in the mud and everything else. That's what he was doing behind my back. And the white boy, he did the best he could telling me, you know, the way he was seeing it. He didn't want to come right out and say who was doing what, but that's what he told me. And so I come to the conclusion, our people have some very, very, very serious problems. Very serious problems. When you have an individual who don't know, and worse than that, they don't want to know, and they cannot spell the word objective or being objective. They are functioning at a certain vibrational frequency. And this is something that we have to be aware of when it comes to dealing with individuals. See, the worst thing that you could do is try to tell a fool the truth. That's one of the worst things you could do. You would think that, hey, man, he really needs this knowledge. But if you try to give it to him, he'll turn around and attack you. And that's really, really a crying shame for somebody to be that stupid. Now, I'm just give you the bottom line. Not only do he not know, he don't want to know. See, in a lot of cases, it's not what you are saying is wrong. The problem is that it's you who said it. That's the problem. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's the most.
Yes,
that's one
is.
Of the most remarkable. To me, it is a total phenomenon for somebody to have a problem with what you're saying simply because you say it. Now, you can get somebody else from a whole nother species or race or whatever you want to call it to come behind you and tell them the same thing. Oh, man, I know that's the truth, man. I know you're telling the truth, man. I know you're telling the truth. But when you come along and see the same thing, oh, man, all this is. You know, I don't know if you ever Sanford and Son, where Lamont told Red Fox that he come out. How you doing, son? I said, I'm doing just right. So what you doing? Well, I'm going to get a job today. He said, you will? Yeah. He said, I got one for you right here. It say help wanted. Dummy. But it is the most amazing thing that I've seen in my life, and this kind of business here, it literally traps us to the point where you cannot go out and sit among certain individuals without a problem, because they are resonating at a certain low vibrational frequency of consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite amazing. And the worst thing that you can do is tell them that they need to engage in this thing called reading. That's writing and arithmetic. Man, that's some scary stuff to them, man. It scares the bejesus out of them, man. And then they need to have someone to validate what you are saying. I need a higher source. I need a higher, a different source in order to tell me that. In other words, I need somebody or anybody other than you to tell me the same thing that you just told me, and then I'll believe it. But outside of that, because you saying it, I can't go for that. Isn't that something? That's amazing, man. Now,
yes,
brother, you ever before we go to our next break, you want to got something else you want to add?
Well, not really, but you're right. I knew a guy like that. He was a classmate. And every time I brought up something, he wanted to bring up something to try to challenge it. But mind you, he was not a reader, and so he was not informed, but he just wanted to uninformally counter whatever it is that I said, but yet he's bringing an uninformed argument, you know. So, yes, there are some people who do that. That's just who they are, because they think they're thinking that they're smart. You can't tell them they ain't smart. Okay, so they feel that in their mind they feel that they qualified to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's all I wanted to add to that, brother. That's all. It's some people out here like that. That's toxic.
Yeah, it is toxic, because what I'm doing is not only am I dealing with the research and stuff that we're currently doing now, because we're uncovering a lot of stuff, man. This stuff here has been hidden so long. A lot of it I had thought I knew, but now I'm able to see the depth and the magnitude of information that I read. Like you take the book When Rocks Cry Out, that was written by the brother Horace Butler.
Horace Butler.
And
mm-hmm.
One thing that stuck in my mind, he say he was looking for these ancient maps and stuff, and he went to this monastery, and the man in the monastery told him, say, I've been waiting on you, and this is what I have to give for you, because it was predicted that you would be coming for this information. I'm going to give you this information. And that stuck in my mind. I said, well, isn't that something? That's super fantastic. But I ran into this footage, well, two pieces of footage, totally detailed description of Atlantis. Amazing. Now, I haven't put that out yet. But I ran into it's a priest that's down there in Bolivia. And this priest, he is financed by the Vatican to be where he is to administer to the native people down there about Christianity and religion and stuff, because it's still going on. However, the natives start bringing him artifacts in the form of gifts. And what they were doing was going up, down to, keep in mind, they're down there in Brazil, and they were going down into below sea level caves. Deep, some of the caves went for miles, and they was bringing stuff up and giving it to the priest, and he was storing it in this little monastery that he had. It didn't have much room up in there. And he didn't want no money for nothing. He didn't, you know, he didn't want the Vatican to pay him. He was doing what he was doing because he loved to do what he was doing. But the natives down up in there, they was bringing him works of art. They was bringing him sheets of gold and silver and bronze and copper, and this stuff had never been seen in the history of the world. And the only thing that they could say is this stuff here had to have come from the antediluvian period, before there ever was a creation of an Adam and Eve, or before there ever was a Noah's flood. And so what happened is, cameramen, the media got in the wind of it, and they went down there and they started videoing and showing you this stuff. And I got this, I just put the footage of this stuff up over there at a Modern Secure Party and Creditor page over there on Facebook. And they could not film it all or present it all to the general public. And they told the priest that what we're going to do is we're going to go back to America, and we're going to come back over here and do some more filming and footage and videos and stuff so we can put this information out. Now, keep in mind, the priest, they were bringing so much stuff that the priest, he had to open up a larger monastery so he had more room to put stuff in. And he was getting older and stuff. And he contacted the Vatican. And the Vatican was the one that financed him to get the biggest monastery, bigger little monastery and stuff. But then the Vatican told him, they seal it up. Don't let nobody else see this stuff no more until we get somebody over there to take this stuff off your hands and get it out of there. And then he passed away, and then another priest came over in his place, financed by the Vatican, and he told the media about it. By that time, the media then got there, and he told them, said, well, you can't, you're not allowed to come in here. We can't let you take no pictures. We can't let you video nothing else. And they said, well, look, we've already been over here once. And they said, yeah, but on orders of the Vatican, you can't do anything else. And what they did was the Vatican sent people over there from institutes like Smithsonian Institutes and stuff, confiscated all of it and took it away from there. And so nobody else could ever see it again. Because this here goes against the grain. Okay. Of all the lies that we've been telling for over 400, 500 years. And we got to put a lid back on this same thing. They were bringing stuff up from the antediluvian period. You see in Kings, matter of fact, a lot of the stuff and statues and stuff that you see in books about, like, what you call that, Babylon and all this little stuff here, it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It was in that cave, in the caves in America. And they stole it and put it out so they could breathe life in it and make you think something else, try to keep the lie going. But anyway, you got to see this thing, man. It's amazing. So right now, we're currently working on Atlantis and Lemuria and all of this stuff right here. And it's super fantastic. And this information come out a while back, but I didn't see it. Now, I've seen some of the stuff, but I did not see all of it. But anyway, what I'm going to do, Brother Yoel, I'm going to take a little quick break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll go down into the closing, okay?
Okay.
You got any more questions?
No, sir. Go ahead.
All right. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Real Black House in the Forum Podcast. This is Big BJ checking in. Today's conversation, we're going to talk about the inner cities of America. We're going to address a comment. We're going to talk about black-on-black crime. We're going to talk about politics. And we're going to talk about the phraseology of white-on-white crime, and we're going to compare that to black-on-black crime. How about that? And we're just going to have a real adult conversation, and we're going to shoot the bobo. And we're going to have a good time because we're going to talk about the history of cities, right? Because on Real Black Consciousness Forum Podcast, beloved, we call the cities the nigger-making manufacturing centers of America. But it's a reason why we say that. We just ain't throwing no words out. We are saying this is historically what cities do. They make niggers, right? I want to say, beloved, shout out to the commenters because comments, of course, on this podcast is the engine and the fuel to the machine, right? When you see us make a conversation, we just didn't pull it out of thin air. We go to the comments, and then we allow the commenters to determine what direction this podcast is going to go as far as conversation is concerned, right? There's good energy from the kings and queens, beloved, and we have a conversation based on that, right? So the commenter says, just a question. Is black-on-black crime perpetuated on blacks by blacks because of being black, or is it regular crime as white-on-white crime is considered? Latino on Latino, Asian on Asian. As for what you said about L.A., it's all true. A rat race on steroids, right? All right. And again, we appreciate the commenter. So let's go. Yeah, beloved, let's have that conversation, right? Here on Real Black Consciousness Forum Podcast, we do indeed talk about black-on-black crime. And we want to highlight the crime and circle it. And we're going to talk about what is white-on-white crime? What is brown-on-brown crime? What is yellow-on-yellow crime, right? Let's have a conversation about that. The phraseology and the terminology, right? I want to say right around 1980s is the first time I can recall the term white-on-white crime being used, right? It came from liberals, and those guys are tricksters, right? They're mixologists. They're devils, and they're pretty good at giving our people half the truth. So when you see those guys lie, they're speaking in their native tongue because this is what liberals do, right? So, you know, the violence that went through every inner city in America was always recorded and documented as an issue. And that issue was coined black-on-black crime. Now, crime itself, it can be manipulated. You can manipulate crime with over-policing. You can get a bunch of guys in jail just by over-policing anything. In order to see the true behavior of a community, of a city, of a people group is, in my estimate now, beloved, you always look at the homicide numbers. Because the homicide numbers is going to tell the tale
of the behavior pattern of the people. You always look at the homicide numbers. You don't look at the crime statistic number. You look at the homicide, right? Okay. White on white crime is a phrase that came from liberals. And in my estimate, they brought that phrase to us because they didn't want niggas to feel so bad about them killing each other. So they say, hey, listen, because this is what liberals do. They mix up the truth. They make mixologists. They're tricksters. They say, look, black man and black woman, you kill where you live. I don't know if you guys ever heard that phrase before. You kill where you live, right? And then they start showing you statistics. They say, listen, black-on-black crime is to the tune of 90%. But then they say, white-on-white crime is to the tune of 90%. And they say, look, the brown man, brown-on-brown crime is 90%. And then they say, yellow-on-yellow crime, which is our Asian brothers, is to the tune of 90%. And they say, listen, we're all equal because you all kill where you live. I don't know if you ever heard that statement. And again, they come amongst us to tell niggas this because niggas, you won't feel so embarrassed or you ashamed because y'all killing each other at a higher rate. They say, no, you guys are not. You're killing each other at a normal rate of 90% just like the rest of us. This is how they bring it to you like this, right? All right. How you see through the bullshit in that, beloved, is that you don't look at the percentage because it's just a percentage. You look for the number. What is the actual number of the homicides that happen in black violence? And what is the actual number in brown on brown, yellow on yellow, and white on white? You don't look at the percentage. The guy's a devil. He's a trickster. He is excellent at technology. But if we want to help our people, we got to look at the real mirror. We can't look at what we have to look at the real deal. Black folks have an issue because in our village, our homicide number is higher than all the rest of the ethnicities combined. Did you hear that? Not the percentage, the number. So I'll give an example. Our conversation was based on a young brother. His name is PNB. He's an entertainer. He's a hip-hop artist. He lost his life in Los Angeles, and he's originally from Philadelphia, right? If we go and pull up the numbers on Philadelphia alone, to date, there have been 388 homicides in 2022. This is a 1% increase from last year. Now, Philadelphia is the sixth largest city in the nation. It got like 1.5 million people. Okay, so now we have to do the hard numbers. 388 homicides in the city of Philadelphia. This is black-on-black violence. Now, if this whole 90% shit is real, that means I should be able to take other cities that's outside of Philadelphia because, you know, Philadelphia is a large city. So I should be able to go outside of Philadelphia. And these are, of course, smaller cities, but I'm going to have to combine all these smaller cities in the state of Pennsylvania that are equal up to 1 million, and I have to see, do I get 388 homicides out of it? Because this is what the black city is doing. So I got to go through all these white cities and put them all together and see if I get 388. And when you do that, beloved, you don't get it. You don't get 388. That's the problem. That means that our community is having a real issue that is unique outside of the rest of the communities that we live amongst. We're different. Not a good different. This is a bad different. Now, here's another number I'm going to give you in Philadelphia because we ain't playing a 90% game and white-on-white crime. No, we're not going to play that game. Black folks have a unique issue in this country. We have a real problem. We got to address our real problem. In the city of Philadelphia, this year, 1,700 people have been shot. I want you to stop. I want you to let that marinate. 1,700 people have been shot. They didn't die. 388 of those that were shot, they died. But let's go to the bigger number. 1,700 people were shot, meaning somebody pulled a pistol from their waist or got it out their car or they came out of their house and they pointed a pistol at another black person and they pulled the trigger. So even though we got 388 homicides so far in the city of Philadelphia, that was not the, everybody else that intended to shoot, they wanted to kill their target, I suspect.
1,700 black folks shot. 17. This is, I got to put this in your mind, beloved. Now, nobody can't come amongst us and say, listen, beloved, it's okay, Shamika, Latanya, Jerome, because see, white on white crime is just the same as yours. No, it's not the same. Something is wrong with niggas. Now, I'm an original man. You think I enjoy saying this kind of shit? You think we just get happy on the microphone and say, hey, you know, we don't like saying this shit. We have to go out in these cities and live it. It's our babies out here that's out here on the streets, beloved. 1,700 people in Philadelphia this year have been shot. What are you going to do about that? What other ethnicities do is they allow their culture to fix the issues. But see, we don't have a culture, beloved. Black Americans in the inner city, we don't. Our culture came out of the South. We left what mama and them told us back down in the South. Because see, the history of cities in America is to build and make niggas. The inner cities of America is nigger making manufacturing centers, beloved. It just not it. This is not nothing new. It just didn't recently become this way. It was always this way. Let me give you the history on the city of Detroit where I'm from. Right? And I'm going to show you what I mean about how cities make niggas. Right? If you look at the early colonists of the city of Detroit, they were Frenchies. They was Frenchies and they was Indians. That's who had the city first, right? You know, this is where you get Cadillac from. You know what I'm talking about? You see the fancy car, you know what I mean? Diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with the gangster link. Ooh, ooh. Well, people love these caddies, right? But that's who supposedly, quote-unquote, founded Detroit. Cadillac founded Detroit, right? Okay. So you got the Frenchies. And you got the Indians, right? Okay. I want to say in the 1800s, you get a mass, I'm talking about we started getting, they was coming in left and right. You get a mass, I'm talking about, they're coming on that ship heavy. Heavy, beloved. We get a good dosage of Irish. They came into the city in the 1800s. I'm talking about Detroit. If you look at the old gazettes and the paper clippings, the Irish were the first niggas of Detroit. Because when they got there, the immigrants, they was looked at fighters, they was drunkards, they was robbers, they was killers, they created gangs, they wasn't to be trusted, and bop, 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 bop. That was the Irish. First niggas of the city. And then you got the Italians came in shortly after them. And it was the same thing. They brought these gangs. They called it mafia, the mob. These guys are drunkards. They're crooks. They love to gamble and bop, bop, bop. The second niggas of the city, right? The government whooped on their ass so much so that they folded. They gave in. The Irish have then took over law enforcement. They made that deal. And if you see law enforcement and the culture of law enforcement, it's the Irish. You know, they got the 21-gun salute. They blow these bagpipes. They do all this shit that they get from Ireland, right? The Italians did a different deal. They went with the fire department. So That's their portion that they got. While they're working the cities, and I can imagine, just like Detroit, so went Philly, so went Jersey, so went Chicago, so went Cleveland. It's all the same. These cities was occupied first by the Irish came, first niggas, and then the Italians came behind them. All right. Our people is in the South in the fields. We have this thing about black folks. We have a pride. We have arrogance. We say things to the tune of, we built America. You know, America wouldn't be shit if we built this, we built that. And we built a lot of stuff. Primarily what we did build was the wealth of America. The southeast portion of America, to be more particular, and who ran that was small hats and devils. We was on them fields, and we was working. There was planners on the books. We was working for free or very small income,
and we made those people rich and wealthy. There's a lot of old money, as they say, in the South. We didn't build the West. We did not build the West Coast. We didn't build the East Coast. Those cities was already constructed by the Frenchies, the Irish, and the Italians. So when we moved in, they just moved out. Now, this is what I mean, beloved, when I say the cities are nigger-making manufacturing centers of the United States, right? When we got to the cities, the streets or the street code or the underworld was already constructed. The Irish and the Italians invented the street world. And when we got there, they gave us the rules. The street world worked like this. It works like that. No snitching, this, that, blah, blah, blah. They gave us these rules. We trying to follow behind these folks. Now, all this shit, the underworld, is financed by small hats. He's always going to be in the back, behind the curtain, putting the money up for you to be foolish. So you got all this bootleg liquor and this and that, and this these gambling houses, and they running the numbers and all this old kind of shit. But he's in the back financing everything. But the quote-unquote street code or the street culture is invented, again, beloved, by small hat, Irish, and the Italians. Our people went into the streets, and we took on the street culture. We didn't bring what mom and them gave us. Our true culture of being righteous, we left that in the South. We came up north to these cities in the Midwest, and we became different. We became a nigger. They taught us how to be niggers through street culture, because this is what street culture makes. It makes niggers. All right, beloved. One of the questions that the commenter asked was this, right? They asked, was black-on-black crime just on blacks by blacks because of being black? Like, did we just violate each other just because we were black? And my answer to that, beloved, is yes, we did. Of course we did. We assaulted black people just because they were black. Because this is the code. It was stamped by liberals. This came from the big house in Washington, beloved. In 1968, there was a devil named Lyndon Baines Johnson. Him and Congress, they passed a law, and it was called the Hate Crime Bill. What the Hate Crime Bill did is it made you can only shoot, kill, and stab your own people. Because when it started to have diversity in this country, you know, if you was a black person, right, and you went out to the Italian neighborhood and you stabbed you a wop, or you went out there and you seen this, you went out there where those sand niggas is at and you stabbed you in the Arab or something like that. You was violent to somebody that was non-black. Let me just say it that way. If they came back and they can say, well, he did this because of my race. He did this because of my religion, my national origin. Blah, 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 blah. They sold him that old song and dance. Because of that 1968 statute, instead of you getting 5 years for assault, you got 20. Instead of getting 10 years for that homicide, you got 30. Because you did it outside your race. That was a setup to keep niggas killing each other at a higher rate than anybody else. Now, the same liberal, he come back behind you, he'll coddle you, he'll say, hey, listen, see, you do the same thing we do at the tune of 90%. You don't. The 90% part is right, but when you look at the number, it's not the same. It's always higher than any other ethnicity in the whole state, wherever you at, because you're in the cities. That's how that works, beloved. And again, I know we go through the whole, we built America, we love that whole, yeah, we built America, yeah, yeah, yeah. But when you got to the city of Detroit, them goddamn houses and all that shit was already built. When you got to Cleveland, it was already built. So you came in. Historically, beloved, they call that white flight. You came in and they moved out. They let you have it. Shit, you want it, you got it. They packed up their shit and left. You went into Cincinnati. You went into Indianapolis. You know what I'm saying? You went into Boston. Well, they really ain't give you all the Boston. They going to hold on to Boston. But, you know, they gave you Charlotte. No, they gave you Louisville. You know, they gave you what they can give you. They held on to some of these cities. Nah, this shit going to blow up. We ain't getting up out of here. Because all that shit was Irish when I went to. I felt like I was in Ireland when I went to Boston. They ain't giving up that. We took on the street culture. We don't have our original culture no more. We don't got what mom and them taught us.
Yeah, niggas shoot niggas just because they're niggas. Do we like saying that? No. We use Philadelphia as a conversational piece today. 1,700, I don't know if you can really fathom that. 1,700 plus people were shot in Philadelphia. Can you fathom that? These are black folks now. Something is wrong with us. And I can guarantee you, beloved, all this activity happened between 16 to 25. I'm going to bump up that last number. Let's say 16 to 29. So I had brothers come on the podcast, and they say, V, we like what you're saying, but you paint the picture that all black men are violent. And I can point to any nigga making manufacturing city in America, and I can show you they're violent. Our people is violent there, beloved. Now, what normally gets a people group out of a mud hole, you know, out of a quicksand, is culture. We do not have culture. We're religious, but the religion that we take on from the East is not going to work for us like it works for them, because their religion, it's their culture. It's the same thing. So, like, I can come on and I can play the Arabian game with my people, and I can get down and I can do the rituals of what they do in the East. Like, I'm an Arab. I can make Shahada. I can make Salat. I can do Hajj. But it's not going to work for me like it works for them, because that's their religion is their culture. It come out of them. It's going to work for them. Or let's say if I go to a different part of the East, I can do the ritual. I can do baptism. I can do tithing. I can do communion. But what is my culture? How is my culture going to get me out of this? Because I'm using their tools to fix my problems, but their tools work better for them. If I sat down 50 black men and we sit in a room and I say, what is the ritual that we do in our village that black men become black men? And I sit back and wait for an answer, I'll be there for a long time. We're going to be there for a minute. Okay, what is the ritual that we do in our village that we are igniting young black men to be? This is the crossing over from teenager to adulthood. We don't have a ritual that signifies that. We don't have a bar mitzvah. What do we do? We don't do nothing. If I came and I set parents down and I said, what is the proper age that our children should date the opposite sex? What is the proper dating age? This guy household gonna have an answer. This guy gonna have a household gonna have an answer. This guy household gonna have an answer. But the folks in the East, see, they already got it in their religion. They know what's the proper dating age. They already got that figured out. We don't have it figured out. So what we turn to is street culture in the inner cities, and it doesn't work. And we have to admit, well, we got a problem in our neighborhood because we can't fix nothing. The real common shit, we don't have an answer for common shit because we don't have a culture in the inner cities. So something is wrong with us, beloved. Something is wrong. You know, back when I was in high school, beloved, we had metal detectors on every door entering the high school. Metal detectors. This is a place of learning. We had to literally go through metal detectors every day. That means something is wrong. Listen, when churches or religious temples need alarm systems and barbed wire to protect what's in the inside, something is wrong. When you have a pollution problem in a neighborhood or a trash problem, it's litter all over the place. That is a reflection of the behavior pattern of the people. Something is wrong. When you have a single parent epidemic, something is wrong. When you got the highest dropout rate in the country, something is wrong. When you got the worst health of any other ethnicity in the country, you got the highest STD rate than anybody else in the country, something is wrong. When you got the lowest marriage rate, yet in the same breath, you got the highest divorce rate, something is wrong. When all of your nightclubs, right? Because see, traveling is the best education. You went to Chinatown, you went into the club, you had a good time. You went to the Irish pub,
You went, you and your partners, you had a good time. You went to the Italian spot. Went, sat down, ate, had a good time. When you got to come back to your nightclubs in the village, niggas got armed security out there. You got to go through a pat-down process to just go into the club. Beloved, something is wrong. Something is wrong. Something is wrong. How do we fix this, beloved? We got to get married. Black folks got to have their own culture. I can sit back. I just watch our people run to the East. I'm talking about mentally. They staying in there. They think that East going. I'm like, all right, just let me know when you get back. You know, some of our people really jumping on planes and going to Hodges and, all right, well, let me know when you get back. Philadelphia is one of the most Islamic cities, beloved. And, you know, y'all, they everybody makes a lot and everybody, okay. 1,700 people got shot. Is it working? How do we use these religions from the East? How do we track progress? The buildings are here. You see all these large, everybody got a conference and this and that, and they going to sit the folks down and talk. And, okay, what gets done? What gets better? What is the bar for something to get better? There is no bar. So you hear when you get around religious people, they say things like, we living in the last days, beloved. Things are getting worse. Crime is going up and this and that. And you have to, when you leave that city where they're from and you go outside the city, you don't think the world coming to an end. Like, nah, this shit ain't bad. It's just what niggas is at. We hate to say it, but we got to, because this is an issue. If we don't give up all we got and sell out marriage, our people going to be in big trouble. The future ain't no, we have to sell all the way out for the institution of marriage. That's the only way you can fix the village, beloved. You can't fix it no other way. You want to see people clean up their neighborhoods? You're going to look at their neighborhood different when you got a spouse. You're going to look at club life different when you got a spouse. You're going to value life different when you got a spouse. If everybody's single and their baby mothers, they're going to be, it's dangerous, beloved. That's a dangerous place. There is no families, man. The highest drug users in the United States is devils. Do you guys know that? Some folks love drugs. They really ain't really too keen on living in reality. They got to get high. They got to get high some way, some form, some shape. But you know what? If you kind of watch those guys, when they become junkies, even the females and males, it don't really matter. When they become junkies, their household can still kind of sustain itself because they was together. They believe they was already married. They got like a two-parent household kind of deal. So daddy get on that shit, mama got to hold everything together. The family and the kids, they lean on mama. When mama get on that shit, daddy got to hold everything together. They lean on daddy. All right, let's come to the black village now. See, we ain't got two parents in the household. We just got one. So when mama get on that shit, boom, the household is fucked. Who we going to lean on? See, a drug dealer is more detrimental to our community than it is to theirs. They can bounce back. They can recover. Their people is smart enough to build counseling centers and rehabs for their own that get in the issue. Who's building a rehab center for you? Who's building a counseling center for you? I know y'all going to put some prayer on it. I get it, because our people going to put prayer over everything. Goddamn, we put the pork down. We praying over the pork now. This is where we at. You praying over that pork? Everybody got hypertension. What's going on with the prayer? I be asking like, yo, you praying over pork chops and chitlins? Like, how is that? Your body as a black and brown person, it doesn't receive that well. It's not going to work out well. They don't work for you, beloved. Now, your own person that come amongst you will tell you that. The people in the East even know that. But we follow the folks in the East only so much. We in bad shape, beloved. We in bad shape, man. Our people got to totally sell out for marriage. Totally sell out for marriage. That is the only, you got to rebuild the family union. If your community and your village ain't got a family unit, man, you're not going to have shit. Yes, black folks kill black folks because they're black, because the liberals fixed it that way in 1968. If you shoot anybody outside your folks, that's a hate crime. The LGBT community, they were smart. They were slick on that. When they seen that, they jumped onto that shit. And they used the crime bill to protect them. This is where we at. This is where we at, beloved. We got to sell out for marriage. We got to sell out for marriage, man. Ain't nothing else going to work. If you really think about it, you know, black folks ain't got everything in this country that they beg for, and it don't make them no better. You got all the religious freedom in the world, don't make you no better. You got all the education in the world, it don't make you no better. You wasn't making money back in the day. You're making big money these days. Don't make it no better. Right? You said, you know what? There's a ceiling we got on us in America. If we could just get a black president, we'd be, see, that's the only thing we can't do in America. Boy, you labor so hard. They gave you one. These folks gave you everything you want in this country. You want that? Boom, hon, you got it. You want you some coaches? Hon, you got it. You want you some political representation? Look, all your cities, they got shines at the top of all your cities now. Everything you said you wanted, the man that just sit back here and gave it to you. You still ain't got no better. You got everything but a spouse. I can submit to you. You can give all that shit back. Give all that political stuff back. Give up. And if you sell out for the institution of marriage, you'll get far. It doesn't dawn on our community that other ethnicities can come right in the country and pass you up. And you think, oh, man, they got some tax laws that they can get by 7 years, brother. They can, no, man, they coming up with a family unit. They're going to always pass you up. You're going to baby daddy your way through this society. You're going to baby mama your way through this society. That shit ain't work. They're going to always pass you up. Only way you can be saved. And then eventually we're going to have to get out of the cities. We got to get out. They was made to make niggas for cities. That's what these cities is for. They was made to make niggas. That's why they make them so big. They make them large on purpose to keep the crime rate up. They make them large on purpose so they can give you a chance to be wicked. They're constructed to be large. They open up the borders for these cities on purpose. Hey, I'm going to tell you some real game, and I'm going to let you guys go. How about this, right? You know, I'm going to tell you something I learned, right? See, the city of Detroit is so big. I've seen this shit firsthand. It's going to be hard for you to identify a sucker because the city kind of split. It's east side and then there's west side, right? You can be a sucker on the east side of Detroit, and then you come over on the west side and you can play monster. You the baddest motherfucker anybody ever seen. Then you see suckers on the west side. They was lames. But the city's so big, you can kind of go to the east and then you can recreate yourself. See, what cities do is they allow you to throw a rock and hide your hand because you can always hide out because it's so big. You don't have to be a man about shit. Now, when you leave a big city, you leave Philadelphia, you leave Detroit, Chicago, and you go down south to the smaller cities. See, you got to be more of a man now because, see, these cities just got one mall. They ain't got 10 shopping malls. They just got one. They ain't got a bunch of high school. They got three or four. So you can't throw no rock and hide your hand. You got to stand up for what it, you got to be who you are now. This is why people have difficulties being who they, this is why city boys don't want to go to smaller cities because you have to be a man about your shit. See, it's easy to be tough and there's 30 other guys with you, you in the big city. When you go down to a smaller city, no, it's going to be hard to get 30 guys to follow. You know, you stand on your own. You get out there, you make that fist fight on your own. You got to throw that rock and you got to stand on that rock you threw because it's smaller. You can't hide in the crowd no more. Cities make good niggas because you can hide in the crowd. You can hide in the crowd. The smaller the community get, you can't hide that way. Everybody can just see who you is. It's just not going to work. That's why some of these guys, you hear stories over and over and over. He was the biggest gunslinger, the biggest thug on the street. And you call up one of your partners in prison. And you say, hey, man, is Smokey up in there? Is Lily in there?
Is JoJo in there? What are he doing up in there? He was a killer on the street. And man, that nigga don't even come out of cell. He don't come out and do nothing. And the guy that was the lame in the neighborhood, he goes to prison. He's a somebody. Because he was the lame. He couldn't convince a lot of people to follow him. But when he get on that yard, it's different. Now he can stand talk. Who want it? Nobody wants it. Like, oh, man, he peanut run the jail. Peace and black power to you, family. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys for hanging out, beloved.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Brother UA, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what's your take on it, man?
No doubt that I would absolutely agree that part of the problem is marriage, as he put it. But you're talking to a guy who came from a small town and went to the nigger factory. And I now, 30, 40, 40 years later, and I got made into a nigger and came back to the city, and I found out that the nigger was right here in the small town when I got back. So whatever air I was breathing and whatever they feed me up in the nigger factory in the cities, I found out that you didn't have to be in there. Cities to breathe that air or to drink that Kool-Aid or whatever, because they're small towns now in the rural areas in the South are nigger factories now, too. Now, there's many ways that we can probably pontificate on how they got that way, of course, because, you know, after going up there and coming back, some of them brought that disease back down here with them. However, we right now, we got it. It's been spread it. So marriage is not the absolute and not the signed, sealed, and delivered answer to our problems right there. You know, it's a part of our problem. I agree. I agree with some of the things that he's saying. It's an interesting way of looking at things, you know. But and that cultural thing, I definitely would agree with the cultural thing. We don't have the culture in place. It's just whatever we want to do. Or as that old record used to say, it's your thing, do what you want to do. Well, you know, somebody has to tell you what to do with that thing. You can't, it can't be no longer for us, it's your thing, do what you want to do. No. We need something in place to tell us, to give us a yardstick to measure from, whether that's religion or something else, but something has to tell us that give us some perimeters to go by, you know, because I've seen guys who maybe might be married, but he brings that same nigga mentality to the marriage and he runs that marriage like a nigga. So something happens. He the only thing he knows is that nigga bag he got. And he goes in the nigga bag and pulls out that same stuff he would have pulled out if he was single. So that ain't the solution. But I will say that family is the cornerstone of nation building. And there's an old African proverb that goes that the ruins of a nation begins in the home of its family. So there's another one that I think come out of Confucius, and it talks about how if you want to see if when men of old wish their virtues to shine throughout the land, they first had to govern themselves well, and all of that, and it goes all the way down to they had to acquire knowledge. And when they acquire knowledge, discipline is acquired. With discipline acquired, they govern their families well. When they govern their families well, they govern their states well, and their virtues shine throughout the land. So I think that's more of what we need to be focusing on right there to try to come out of this nigger factories we've been running into and coming out very much like they said, because if they were, then they, I mean, what's the problem with the original nigger, the white nigger that go in these places, and they got messed up attitudes and messed up personalities too, you know. But it's something on us
It's a demon on us that ain't necessarily on everybody else, but and I'm not so sure that he brought to the table the absolute or the complete picture of what we are dealing with here. That's what I have to say to Harper.
Okay. Well, I'm inclined to agree with you 100%. Yeah, family is the basic unit of society. However, this is another good reason why tonight's broadcast does exist and why we're doing it now. And we're dealing with the basic principles of black consciousness. And to repair to damage and to start thinking differently before you get in a position to try to engage in the institution of marriage. So I personally feel like if we, to break it down real, real simple for us, if both him and her and me and her start dealing with the man in the mirror and be absolutely serious about what we're doing, because we know that the family is the basic unit of society. So if we got both parties on the same page, or both parties trying to be on the same page, and then I think we have a chance because we are dealing with mother and father and child. And that's a part of what I was asking you about. If you would create a man, where would you create him at? What place would you create him at? But what I'm going to do is take a little quick break, and when we come back, when we go in a couple of minutes, when we come back, then we can go on and start closing this thing on out. Just y'all hold on a minute, man. and everybody. We're going down to the close of the broadcast. Brother UL, you are still with me, man?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
All right. You want to give us how to get in touch with you again and so they can get these books and stuff, man?
Okay. You didn't get to read that list, though, did you?
Well, no, I sure did, man. It's so long. I got 19 books on here. I read them at the top of the broadcast, but I think, you know what? I better write this stuff down in an email and send it over there to him, and so he can see if he got them. And ladies and gentlemen, if y'all want these books that I call off on this broadcast, call him and see. See if he got them up
okay.
in there, and if he ain't, get them for you. How about that?
Okay. Okay. And with that said, I say this, that actually your brother was headed down a road that we definitely need to deal with. And before I give my information, that is, before the brother was headed down something, but he reminded me of something. Remember the movie Roots, where the elder men took these younger brothers from boyhood to manhood, they took them out and they trained them, right?
Right.
And when they finished training them, they sent them back home, and they had to do certain things that prove that they're a man. And, you know, you've heard it pretty probably many times. In order to be a man, you got to see a man. So a lot of these brothers haven't seen men. So how can they be a man if they never seen a man? You know, so that's also something, an element that needs to be considered in what that brother's conversation was, telling us how setting the stage for us to become marriage, because most of us don't know what the hell marriage is, especially today's marriage anyway. But anyway, you can get in contact with me at the Underground Bookstore, 1727 East 87th Street in Chicago, Illinois. Telephone number, 773-768-8869. That's 773-768-8869. And you can email me at undergroundbookstore1@gmail.com. Undergroundbookstore1@gmail.com is my email address. And like I said, we here in Chicago, and we open from Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. You know. Did I miss anything there? Oh, I don't think so.
No, you got everything just right. And the part that you were talking about the man, I'm right down here on the corner, and I come out so they can see me every day. And just one man show by myself, ham on and stuff, and show them how to grow, plant their own tree, grow their own food and stuff, just like a man. But now, what I'm doing tonight is I'm trying to show us that this sort of go both ways, both male and female, and how conscious are we? How is your vibration resonating? And then if everything is on the same page and everything's just right, and then we done met each other toe-to-toe and head-to-head and all that kind of stuff, well, maybe we can start talking about some marriage or some old stuff like that. But because the institution of marriage is the basic unit of society, and it is true, but how you going to marry somebody if you don't know they're qualified to be a man? Well, the first thing that a man has to do is qualify, and he qualifies with himself. And the first thing a woman's going to have to do is she's going to have to qualify, and she qualifies with herself. Now we're ready to step in the ring. It's just like two boxers. You know, you got the Joe Frazier camp, and then over here to the right, you got the Muhammad Ali camp. And then we're going to meet in Manila, and then the rest will be history for the thriller. So that's the way I look at that thing there. That way we ain't dealing with nothing that's half-cocked. So
right.
A lot of people, I think, they got it where I got qualified for somebody else. No. You got to come to the conclusion about you first. You got to deal with the man in the mirror first, and you ain't got to worry about no audience because you under surveillance, especially if you are the so-called black man and you out here and you stand up like a man and all this right here. There's no excuse. You know, everybody, you know, sisters, they all over everywhere. They got houses, apartments, condos, and all this right here. Well, what about the black man? Well, he's supposed to be extinct. Well, I don't think so, because he's right down there on that corner right there. I'm looking. But anyway, Brother Joel, I'm going to close this thing down. I appreciate you being on, and ladies and gentlemen, until next time, y'all have a good night.